Our family has grown. Welcome to the world, Hanna baby. Introducing a new collection, Hanna Soft, made with Tencel. It's so breathable, with stretchy comfort for all of baby's first moments. And it's cool and gentle on their skin all year round. Entrusted Hanna quality for your most precious gift. Hanna Soft, made to last. Shop now at hannaanderson.com. Our family has grown. Welcome to the world, Hanna baby. Introducing a new collection, Hanna Soft, made with Tencel. It's so breathable, with stretchy comfort for all of baby's first moments. And it's cool and gentle on their skin all year round. Entrusted Hanna quality for your most precious gift. Hanna Soft, made to last. Shop now at hannaanderson.com.
What's going on, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome back to the No Bad Dogs podcast. It's a lovely one with a lovely individual problem solving on a lot of things that you guys are likely dealing with as well. This is a mini Australian Shepherd that's doing mini Australian Shepherd stuff, right? Herding kids. H-E-A-R-D-I-N-G, not H-U-R-T-I-N-G. So doing a lot of that stuff. And so we talk about how to work with a dog that's doing these things instinctually and what's fair and what should be expected. And just a lot of like good questions on that, on how to like manage these things. And then also working on a lot of the problems that people have is bridging the gap of my dog listens inside, but my dog doesn't listen outside. Why? And my dog doesn't look at me and doesn't engage with me. Why? So a lot of good stuff in this podcast. Lovely individual. It's another human from Germany, so it's always nice to talk to people from Germany. We love Germany. We have family in Germany, so just interesting that we had two people pretty much in one day from Germany. But anyway, if you guys want me to answer your dog training questions specifically, you guys are the listeners. I pay you guys back as much as I can. This is absolutely for free. It costs me hours of my time editing and putting things out and all that fun stuff. The only thing I ask you guys is go leave me a review. We are at the top of the list in the dog training podcast in the United States and slowly climbing in other countries. So if you guys like this, if you like the information, the best thing we could do is let's grow. Let's do this. Let's become the number one dog training podcast in the world. Go and review this podcast. Share it with your friends. Take a screenshot of this podcast if it's helpful for you, and share it and tag us in the Instagram and stuff like that. We'd appreciate it because it's free for you guys, and I just want you guys to get better. But I also want everyone else to get better. So the more you share, the better it'll be. We're on tour right now. We're very excited. Make sure you guys come out and say hello and a meet and greet. And and there's not going to be any questions at the end because we don't have any new questions to answer. So if you guys have questions, I'm waiting. I'm waiting for you guys to ask those questions. Go to the iTunes review chart, leave your review and your questions in there, and enjoy the podcast.
Yeah.
What's going on?
I have a mini Aussie. First of all, I wanted to tell you that I'm so really excited about all your YouTube videos. I've been watching probably hundreds of them. I don't know. I've been watching hundreds of these with other trainers too, or educators. And I feel like, I mean, you have a skill set that nobody else showed. So I learned a lot from you the last couple of months. And I appreciate your work and also educating people for free on YouTube. Anyways, so then I'm doing all of that because I got a new dog that was about 2 years ago. I got a new dog. We had another dog that we had before, and he passed away. And just because of that, then we had not a dog for a long time. My daughter has her own dog now. And so then I decided during COVID, I want another dog. And so I wanted something that is like our old dog, and wanted to have a herder. So I got a mini Aussie. I got a smaller version of an Aussie and thought that would be great. I read a lot about it beforehand. And then I got a rescue. She was 9 months old, and now she's 2 years and 9 months. I got her from this rescue place, got a little bit about her story. She was the breeder. She's a full bred, and she was with the breeder up to 2 months, and then they sell them. And some lady bought it and had it probably from 2 months to whatever, 4 months. And then after that, it happened that she gave it up. And the story was to the rescue that that lady was not, you know, she didn't know about puppies. She probably worked all day. The thing was sitting in the crate, the crucial time when you socialize a dog. So then I got the dog, was 9 months. So the dog stayed from 5 months to 9 months in this rescue facility. And it was in its own, you know, whatever outdoor facility, but there were lots of little dogs around it. I think it was socialized somehow, but not really. And it didn't have really an owner. It lived with 10 other dogs in that facility. And then I got it. So anyway, so because it's a herder and I read a lot about it, I hope that my dog is not having the behavior that a herder has, like the strong genetic behavior that they want. They have a high prey drive and they have a high protective drive. But my dog developed to a dog like that. So she's very highly reactive.
Is this sorry to interrupt.
Do it.
You're talking about the Australian Shepherd?
Yes.
Okay. Uh-huh. Mini Australian Shepherd.
But a mini. Yeah.
Okay.
And so at the beginning, it was my fault. I can recall that now because I learned so much afterwards. I had these issues that I will address in a second, that I learned so much about that. It was my behavior that I babied her at the beginning because I felt sorry about her, blah, blah, blah. So our relationship was not good at the beginning and the first start because then, you know, I didn't establish a good leadership. So over time, I did more and more, and now I feel like I am at that point, but her major behavior that I don't like, she's having not made as much progress. That is that from the get-to-go, she was charging people, like anything that is new to her that she doesn't know, or like a person, a bike, could be anything else, like then she gets... If she's off leash, she gets to run and starts barking and charges. And then if I have her on the leash, she would focus on it very early in time, and I cannot disengage her from it. She's so heavily genetically in this drive that she has to do something. And so that's the problem from the beginning. So that was all good, and I think I can get rid of it, blah, blah. But on top of it, what came, and this is one part that I haven't seen you train a lot in your movies in reactivity, is how to address when a dog is reactive to kids, which is the hardest in the world because you cannot take a real kid and practice if you don't have like your own kid at home. Mm-hmm. So that's my major issue. I have only seen one movie where you address a little bit, but it doesn't help. Like I need to know, first of all.
Okay. So just to reiterate, the biggest concern that you have is your mini with kids.
Yes, and then in general with other foreign subjects that are also, she shows that behavior at the beginning, but then people usually, like if it's a girl, they start with a high-pitched voice, even if she just runs to them and she would be off leash, and then she's just and then Gigi is all happy. But then if it's a person that fears dogs, Gigi does not stop because she's super smart, highly intelligent, and knows when a person fears, as she senses fear, and then she keeps nipping or charging or whatever she does. It's not, she's a mini, she's 30 pounds, but still that behavior is not acceptable.
Correct. So, So how is, so just to paint a picture for myself, is this, when you're talking about her running up to kids, what is the context? Is she's off leash in your yard or at a park, or where are these kids coming from, and who
Yeah, I'll tell you that. So when she is in the park and she would be distracted, as soon as she's distracted by other dogs, by friends, by people she knows, and there would be a kid involved, she wouldn't focus as much. But if she's unfocused, highly energetic, she'll just go for it. Even if she's on the leash, she would be just alert and would just want to pull or look at it. She's really focused. If she's off leash, she just goes and runs and just starts blah, 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 and that behavior. At the park, we had a couple of times at the dog park. She's often at the dog parks, and she's great there. She's good with other dogs. I trained her at everything. She can do everything. She's a great dog. She's just this one part.
Okay.
I can't train it up.
So I understand. So she's off leash. You're at a park. When she sees certain kids, it's not super consistent. She'll run over. Okay. So how is your recall in general? Like when you call her back to you, is she pretty good?
She's great as long as it's not her instinct or prey drive overdrive it, because then she's not listening, because she doesn't. If she sees a squirrel, she's gone to do her business and then she comes back. If she, like I said, if she gets into this mood where she wants to do what she wants to do, I have no control over her if she's on leash.
Okay.
But if it's anything else, I can do anything. I mean, she'll look at me like, oh yeah, mama, I'm coming, I'm doing this, I'm doing that. She does everything when she's not distracted. She does a lot of stuff outside too. If she's not distracted too highly, then I can even get her attention, all of it. But as soon as this genetics kicks on, the herder, the protective thing, I mean, I'm done.
Okay.
So
this is more of a very basic off-leash control. This is my dog is great with basics until there's a heavier distraction, which means my dog listens to me unless there's something else important going on, which is a very basic, common problem or frustrating thing that a lot of dog owners get with. So there's a couple different things that you can do primarily. Well, there's many things, but I'll talk about them. I think that if you're going to be outside in a park that's a public place, you can't control the environment. So if your dog is off leash and your dog is reactive to kids that are running around and stuff, your responsibility is to make sure that when you say, hey, dog, get here, that they do it.
I know.
And so there's a couple different things. Is you can work on it with either a long line where you hold the dog accountable, or you can transfer to using the remote collar to make sure that you can control the dog when they don't listen.
Yeah.
Because this is a very basic advanced obedience, like jump from, you know, basic obedience to the dog listening, you have a treat, there's nothing really going on, bing, bang, boom. But as soon as there's a distraction, that's where that's where reality sets in for most dog owners. It's like, that's why if you're training with tons of positive reinforcement, that's great. That's what we suggest. That's what we normally do. But after the dog understands the behaviors, we start to take away that external reinforcement, no food or minimal food, and we just reward the dog. But you're just dealing with advanced obedience. So I just think that that's what you should be working on, is get yourself a long line and start to check the dog. Because right now, if your dog just ignores you, there's no accountability. There's basically you just hollering and clapping and yelling and chasing. So those are the two things I would do. Is I would work on a long line to hold the dog accountable. So you say your dog's name, tell your dog to come, and if they don't, you pop the leash and the collar. But I understand that most people are going to be like, well, I don't want to carry this long line around. It's going to get wrapped up. It's going to be a mess. I'm like, okay. But that's where you then transfer to off-leash, like e-collar work.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. My son started e-collar. So the dog was gone for 2 or 3 months because she was with my son in New Mexico, and he took care of her. And I think he didn't believe me at the beginning, that he thought I'm just doing things wrong. And then he knew that she's also not controllable with him in these situations. So he bought an e-collar. I haven't tried it, but he's using it. So he had good results off that. I just didn't know if that's something that you would recommend. I know I seeing you using it, but is that something that gets a dog controlled over time, then the dog accepts that behavior and is better with it? Or does the dog always then has to have that e-collar that it's controlled? I wondered about that too.
Yeah. It's a good question. I think it's dependent on the dog's personality and behavior and training. I think there's a lot of variables that go into it. But I think at the end of the day, there's the first thing is expectation and training. So When we have a dog that's an animal, wild, off leash, running, being a dog, that's probably their happiest form, happiest place to be. Yeah. And our responsibility is to build them up in that environment to make sure that you've trained for that. So like anything else, if you've never hiked a mountain before, you should probably train to hike a big mountain, right? Or whatever it is. If you've never played soccer before, like you should probably practice a little bit or learn how to play before you go into the game. There's always training that's involved in order for the success in the real game. And the real game for you is being off leash in the park. So there's the development of the expectation of the behavior. There's a development of, I think you said your dog's name is Gigi.
Gigi, yeah.
Yes, it would be Gigi come, good come, Gigi come, pop. So having the dog understand the behavior is number one. I think that this is a very good conversation, and it's a very big thing that most dog owners deal with, is if they're having a problem with their dog's behavior, doesn't matter if it's barking, pulling on the leash, not coming back, jumping on guests, whatever it is, the first question I'll always, and it's a very easy template that people pay lots of money for, and I'm like, it's pretty simple. Yeah. Does the dog know the behavior well in the context you're asking? Meaning, does your dog know recall really well? Yes. Okay. How much have you practiced recall under this environment? Not that often. And those two need to kind of come together. So the dog needs to know what you want. And then the second piece to the equation is simple, is what type of accountability and what type of enforcement and what type of punishment or what type of consequence does the dog have when they go, yeah, I know what you said, mom, but I'm not coming because this kid... you know, this kid's ankles are appealing to me right now, or whatever the circumstances is, if it's a lion or whatever. Hey, I want to go. So that's where the accountability comes in. And it's at that very moment where training really comes down to reality of, okay, your dog knows what you want them to do, but they're like, screw you, I'm chasing this kid. That's where you need to go, hey, and get their attention, hold them accountable, make sure they understand they're making a mistake by some sort of communication. And there's nothing else in the world that gives us the option to hold the dog accountable completely off leash other than the remote collar, which is why it's vastly used by millions of people. So the e-collar will be great for you, but you have to condition it. Like, it's not just go get a car if you want to travel. Well, you got to learn, you know.
Haven't even started it because I know it's training and I have to learn, have to build it up.
That's it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I have to have time so to use that and go into it. But you feel like that's something, if a dog gets to know then the right behavior over time, they're kind of, and I do it all right, then over time they get to be better. Mm-hmm. It's not... you don't feel like a dog genetically is so disposed that it's not teachable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, I think it's just a repetition. If you're talking about like severe behavior modification and stuff, it gets a little bit more in depth. But when you're just talking about a dog wanting to do something because you can't hold the dog accountable, you just have to search for the right training and the right training tools to help you connect the dots in order to be successful. And that's the only thing. That's the gap that you're missing. Is Gigi's like, I'm out of here, right? Yeah. And you're like, no, come back. She's like, make me. And you're like, I can't. So then you just got to chase the dog. And so that's where the remote collar comes in to give them a little bit of pressure wirelessly. It's the same thing as everything else in life is, sure, you can chase the dog around, you can get a long line forever, but you could also put a stamp on a letter and send it and wait a couple of days, or you can just send an email. use technology. Yeah. And that's what the remote collar allows us to do.
I guess. So, yeah, that's great. So I'm just having to, is there any, like, do you have any suggestion of how to learn, how to build up in with a collar like that? Is there anything that I can read about, or is there...
Yeah.
Or what would you recommend?
Yeah. So I don't have a ton of reading materials, but Larry Crone has a book. I can't remember what it's called, that you can get off Amazon. Then I have a e-collar. I have a remote collar course, an introductory course. So you can check that out as well. And that kind of goes through all of the processes that you'll have to have, in order to get your dog off leash successfully.
Is that on your website? Where do I find yours? Where is that remote collar course?
Yeah. You know, I can send it to you. It's, for some reason, to be honest, it's not on my website. I have no idea why. It's kind of crazy. But I can email it to you.
That would be nice, yeah. Okay, so that's one thing. But then I have this question in general. Why do you only have dogs that are reactive, but you never, there's no, nothing with kids involved? Why is that? Like, do people come to you because of that, because they just come with their big old dogs they can handle because they're pulling the leash? I don't get that. Why do you have just one little YouTube about kids and that's it? Because there's so many herders who have that, like 50%, I guess, have that. I know that.
Yeah, it's a great question. And the answer is pretty simple, is I only create content from what people bring me. So I don't get to choose what content I create. So the only content that you're seeing out there is people coming in to hire me, and that's what we film. And so that's why. So I don't say like, hey, why doesn't somebody bring me kids? And we get that all the time. People are always like, why don't you have this? Or why can't you do this? I'm like, bring me the dog, bring me the kids.
Yeah.
So that's a very easy answer. And I understand, you know, it's like, it doesn't really curate to exactly what you need, but at the same time, I'm just a creator based off of like real dogs with problems that people are coming in. So,
oh yeah, no, I know that. I just wondered why.
That's it. Nobody's ever brought it in.
Interesting. And then, so I want to also try something out. Remember how you do your little prop dog?
Yeah.
And so I have a great idea. I'm looking on eBay for a 30-inch baby doll that is almost like a kid, and then I have to engage my son to help me out, and I want to practice with that one because I feel like you have to practice on the real deal, which is not a real deal, like you use your toy doll, you pull it around, but I want to have her more exposed to it. And would you think it's a good idea?
Yeah, I think it's a good idea, but I even think like you can, what I would do is lay the foundation in with your e-collar. Like, get that done, get that introduction done, understand that. And then when you take my course in specific, then you basically graduate to reality, and then you just get the long line, and then you can have your cake and eat it too. Like, you know your dog's numbers, the dog has an expectation, the dog understands how to shut the remote collar off, all that stuff happens. And then all you do is you say, okay, now we're going to go to the park, and then you can work on it at the park. So yeah, you can get the baby and the fake things, it's probably not going to represent because it's the running and the noises.
I know it is.
Yeah. So,
but it is. It's just so hard. I can't borrow a kid.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. But they did practice. So when the dog was in New Mexico, my kids practiced on our nephew. So we have a niece and a nephew, and they practiced kind of, you know, her behavior amongst these kids, and they're crazy. They scream a lot and run around. I think they got it partially under control, but what happened is, and maybe they didn't do it long enough, it came over and over, as she would have forgotten what she did the day before that she behaved, and she got punished for bad behavior, but then she did it over and over, almost like it's so ingrained in her. But what you're saying is, I just have to do it long enough with enough patience and with consequence, and then she might get it after, I don't know, many months, depending on how long she takes, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, e-collar training is like anything else. Anything else in the world that that it takes time to understand. And I think it's important for you to just, yeah, you just practice and you build it out. And that's what it is. You practice and you build it out, and then you introduce the dog into those environments. And that's what happens, is you just say, like, hey, this is what we do, this is what we do, this is what we do, this is what we do. Now let's go practice in reality. Let's go practice in reality. And you just copy and paste, and you transfer into those environments.
It just takes so long, I guess, sometimes. So, you know, I think maybe sometimes I don't have enough patience, I guess. I don't know. Or at one point, the interesting part is, you know, the dog we had before, we had one of these natural, beautiful, have it all together dogs, and he, you know, we had this as our first dog. That's not a good thing, because Then you think it's so easy, and then we got this thing that is really, really different. And then I was talking, I got to know somebody at the dog park, and he's also had trained dogs before. He has an Aussie, and he has him for 2 years and 3 years, and he has trained him from the get-to-go. So at least he didn't have, like me, like a long time where he didn't do the right thing. But in general, that dog is so different from mine. That dog is a little more timid and calm. And all that dog does is the eye connection with its owner, and he did it from the get-to-go. It was nothing he had to teach. Mm-hmm. The dog naturally like that. But then you have little machine like mine, who is just so independent. Mm-hmm. She's anxious to be with me, but she doesn't care if she's on her own business. That's the thing. She would be anxious if I run away. She'll be the next to me, because she doesn't want me to leave. But as long as she knows I'm not leaving, she doesn't care almost as much as the other dog. Mm-hmm. I can call the dog from whatever, how many meters away, and the dog will come. The dog will do everything for him. But the dog also looks at his eyes constantly and wants to please. My dog is not a pleaser. My dog is a pleaser to the point that she knows she has to do it. She's smart, and she figured out the game. So I think I just have to work hard. Just not fair. I don't want that. But, you know, you got the dog what you got. I didn't, you know, test her, getting her. And I think every dog needs its own time. Is that the true fact? Or is that what you see too?
Yeah, of course. It's just like with people. Like, it's not even like you can have a million dogs and they might all act completely different. Dogs are not interchangeable, as far as they're all going to act the same, be the same, train the same, listen the same, have the same relationship. Like my dog with my relationship with all of my dogs that were alive and had passed were all different. All of my relationships were different.
Yeah, I see.
They're all different dogs. You can't even, don't even put it into the universe. That's like saying, like, hey, you know, the weather over in Antarctica is just much different from Miami. I don't understand. It's really weird. Does anybody else think that there's a difference between Antarctica and Miami? Anybody? Like, yeah, every dog is so different. I wouldn't even put it, I wouldn't waste your time putting that into the universe of scratching your head. It's there. Yeah. Every dog is different. And there's not even a point or a sense of even saying it out loud to say, like, the other dog, my neighbor's dog, my friend's dog, my past dog, it doesn't matter. None of that matters. None of it.
Okay. And then have you seen that you had dogs that learn faster, and then dogs, they're harder to teach? And
yep.
But eventually, did you get to all of your dogs that you trained to the point where you wanted them?
Yeah. Yeah. I think yes, yes, and yes. Dogs are, like you said, dogs all train differently, just like with people. Like every person is different. There's a person at MIT right now building the next robot to take over the world. And then there's people that just couldn't even go to school. So like, again, it's like you don't get caught up in that. And every dog's expectation is different depending on their genetics, have a big role in their road mapping. So again, like if I have a border collie over here and then I have a Saint Bernard over here, those two dogs are going to be wildly different in what they want to do and what they're capable of because of their genetics, because of their size, because of their behavior, their temperament. So again, it's like every dog is going to perform differently. And you just have to have realistic expectations. But when you have a mini Aussie, I mean, those dogs can do anything you want. But
I know.
But Australian Shepherds in general are some of the, I say this all the time, I would much rather have my client have a Malinois than a Aussie. They are very hardworking, drivey dogs that a lot of people can't handle. And a lot of times they do not make good pets. They need to be working. And
You're right. That's all what I figured out after having her for a while, because they should just not. I mean, they warn you in books and wherever you read about it, but not to that point. They're not family social dogs.
Right.
You can have luck or it will happen, but 50-50 it doesn't. And then what do you do then? And then you have it already. So that's one thing that I learned. If I talk to people who want a dog, I tell them about Aussies, because I don't want anyone to do that mistake and end up not wanting that dog afterwards. I tell them just the expectation and the patience and the training they have to do. Otherwise, you not have a good dog. You can forget about it from the get-to-go. My other thing is with the relationship I have. Like, let's say what she does is she's really protective of me, which is good in a point, but then sometimes it's not good. How do you work with her? Let's say she goes also in my office, and usually she's really, if she knows people, then she's fine with them. But sometimes she's just doesn't get fine with them. Like, she just chooses who she likes or not. Like, there's mostly male who are uncertain about dogs, she nips. And even I had her on the leash and somebody walked by and she knows exactly these candidates. She keeps nipping on it. What should I do to tell her it's not right? What, like, just knock at her leash at that moment or be mad at her? Or what would you do to just tell her this is not a good behavior she shows me?
Yeah, I mean, you have to... I think you answered your own question. Is that you, dogs who are protective sometimes is an instinctual thing. So it's, you know, telling the dog like, hey, don't be protective. They're like, what? This is what I do. This is what I was born to do. Your job is to say like, nope, we're good. I got this. So correcting the dog when they go, I'll get this delivery guy out of here. Don't worry. Correcting that. Say, no, you won't. We don't do that. Go to your place and stay. So then immediately hitting it with some sort of like obedience as well. So again, it's the same, you're dealing with the same type of template in the beginning is, and this will be helpful for you moving forward, is you have to really audit and think about the things that you're struggling with and ask yourself how advanced it is for your particular dog. Because when we're talking about a dog being protective, that means in the car, at the office, at your house, out when you're on a walk. These are all very high distracted, very hard to work in environments for most dogs. And so you have to then ask yourself, like, how good is my obedience? So if your obedience isn't solid off leash, you have to hold your dog accountable at a smaller scale to make sure that they learn.
I see.
And that's what's happening is you're letting your dog have too much space, and they're making a lot of mistakes, or potentially a lot of mistakes, without any enforcement behind it. So if your dog is off leash running around doing a bunch of things that they shouldn't be doing, you shouldn't be worrying about like, why is this happening? You should be thinking about how you're setting this dog up for failure by saying like, my training isn't good enough to have my dog off leash. Done. It's right there. Boom. It ends right there. So after the fact, after you've said that out loud, nothing matters to me. If your dog's obedience and understanding and training isn't great off leash, you can't get upset or complain or scratch your head at why your dog isn't listening off leash. And it, and again, it's the same exact thing as we talked about in the beginning of the conversation. It doesn't matter if it's off leash. It doesn't matter if it's protectiveness. It doesn't matter if it's off leash healing. If your dog's obedience isn't great off leash, you can't expect your dog to do anything off leash.
Yeah,
it's a process. I mean, you're taking a living animal with emotions and feelings and prey drives and all these different things, and you're just like, hey, I want you to listen to me off leash, and they're like, they're not just gonna go okay, like you have to train them on how to behave.
Yeah.
So if all
of my efforts, and if the obedience is advanced and I get it there to this point, it would be possible, if I then can control her, that I can let her off leash at one point and she will do what I want. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's for me the question to even, you know, I want a reinforcement that it's possible if I do the right thing, because then I feel more hope, you know. At the beginning, yes, I should have not have her too much off leash because she got used to a behavior she shouldn't do. But then now she's more controlled. But still, like I said, is there hope there that if I do everything right and do it and work with her, do you feel like it's possible to do so? Because I know you do it, but you spend much more time with the dog. Maybe then you say, if you don't spend enough time, then it's not going to work.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, you have to put in the work.
Yeah.
Like, you, again, same thing. You have an animal that has four legs, and you're trying to tell this animal running around off leash that you want them to listen to your every command at any time. And that takes a lot of work. So, you know, and for me, I really don't get to spend a lot of time with my clients. Like any video that you see me do with any dog, I'll have an accumulative 4 hours with, and their whole life. So any dog you see listen or behave, they come in and do two hours of private sessions, and then they sit in a group and we work the dog for 15 minutes throughout the day. And at the absolute most of any dog you've ever seen me train over the last 5 years on YouTube, unless disclosed otherwise, has been training with me for less than 4 hours. The owner and the dog. And that's something that a lot of people forget, that I'm not a traditional trainer that's getting a dog for 4 weeks and explaining how to finish a dog after 4 weeks of work. I'm working with a dog for less than 4 hours with a dog owner who has no idea what they're doing. That's why I focus so much on education and coaching, and I feel like I've curated my skill sets enough to be able to make such a good impact so quickly and train dogs so quickly, because I never have enough time ever. I have a handful of hours to flip a whole relationship around. So I think if you put in the work, there's no reason why you couldn't achieve anything you want.
Achieve anything. Okay, so that's good to know. The other thing then is when you have, with her, gosh, I just had that thought and lost it. It was really important. What was it? What about this look at me type of thing that I engage more with the eyes? Does that help a lot more, or is it more the obedience that helps more with reinforcement? Like this focusing that she looks at me and wants my attention more.
Yeah.
Is that helpful?
It's a great question. Two big things. Some of it is natural. Some of it is very organic. Like my Dutch Shepherd, Lakota, she just does that naturally because she's so intelligent that she is looking at my face with such expression of like, hey, you, get the ball, get it, get the ball. Like it's like the movies where you see the dog going, hey, there's somebody over here. Hey, there's something. Like she is just like, hey, you, ball, you, chuck it, you, chuck it. So there's that natural drive that she has. She knows through development that everything that she wants comes from me. She can't go out and play with herself. She knows that the human. So that's a natural thing that she has. But then there's also the focus that is created. through obedience, which a lot of competitive rings expect and work on. And you can get a little bit of both, but you have to. So sometimes dogs just do it naturally, and there's no, it's just like competing against a natural athlete. Mm-hmm. They're just a force to be reckoned with without trying. Sometimes you just, you can't, there's nothing you can do about like looking at dogs like that. People all the time are like, man, your dog is lasered on you. I didn't really teach her that. I think what helped and reinforced it is I taught her that she has to look at me in order to get what she wants when she was a puppy. And I think that that helped like really build that up and charge that up. But the other thing that we just worked on with this dog that does a competitive obedience, the AKC, is she wanted that focus on her. And we worked on that with the remote collar using negative reinforcement. And we made it much better. And she won first place in all of her stuff the next week. So you just have to, you have to work on the actual look at me command, and then just like drive that out. Like what I typically do, especially it's easiest with a food driven dog.
Is yes,
you
can,
perfect. Yeah. You get your kibble, you throw it in your pouch, you go out and you start layering drills over. Like you put the food at your face, you know, you say focus, good focus. You start paying the dog from your face directly, like a line, like, you know, like like a zip line right to the dog from your face. And then you just work it. It's the same thing as everything else we've been talking about is anything that you can teach your dog, you can make 1,000 times better over time.
Okay. And then do you call, do you have words for that? Do you say, look, if you want it later on in time, or reinforce it with words, or what word would you use for that?
Yeah, anything. What I would use to answer your question is like look or focus or whatever. You can say whatever you want, but typically those are the cues that people say, and you just work on it, and then you make it better. And then, you know, for this dog that we were talking about earlier, this German Shepherd is, she had to progress to move it in motion. So the dog looking at her and then moving their body was hard naturally because they want to watch where they're going. But we had to teach the dog like, nope, stay on us. And we just progressed over again, 4 hours. Mm-hmm. And then she won first place the next weekend. So you just have to rep it out and work on it.
I see. And then the other thing I had in mind is when she would be, let's say that her senses are so well developed that she hears and she sees everything ahead of me. I mean, she is so fast with those things. So often, because then people say, oh, distract that behavior, la la, even if she's on the leash, I'm just behind her and really can't sometimes see it coming. Because if I see it coming, then I can kind of engage her more, distract her, and then it's better. But if not, then she focuses so long already. And then she's in her fuss. I can't get it away from her anymore. She's so then focused, looking, and staring that she's already there. How do you get a dog off that? Like, do you just get like on the leash again? You just tack on the leash and say leave it, or I mean, she's used to leave it, but she's not using it outside. She knows it in the house when I do it with the cat and the food, and it's all working, but outside that leave it has no meaning. So
well, I think it's reframe that question as you were talking about your off leash recall. It's the same thing. It's like, hey, she knows it really great inside, but then when we hit it in reality, she fails. So it's a bridge. It's a bridge. It's a repetition practice scenario. If the dog knows what you're asking and then you go outside, it's an accountability and a repetition and a copy and paste scenario of the dog just doesn't know it in that context. And it's a very different environment. It's the difference between, again, somebody at batting practice and then being in the ninth inning in Yankee Stadium and the crowd's going crazy. It's a very different thing. So again, it's the same exact thing. Every single thing that we've, it's a template is my dog knows it, but in the real life, it doesn't know it. That's because you're not bridging the two together. You're going from hot to really cold. You're splashing things very quickly and too abruptly. And your dog doesn't have an opportunity to bridge those gaps together. And it's up to you to blend those in together. You have to blend those in together. Perfect example would be, let's just say, let's just say doing basic obedience in your house with food, with nothing going on in your house. Boom. Cool. You got it. You nailed it. Yeah. Then you go to your driveway. Mm-hmm. Then you start to, so that would be a perfect blend of house, driveway, and then down the street. But you're not just going to go from house to down the street, because that's too much of a jump for the dog. There's too many steps involved in the middle that you're missing, and your foundation won't be good enough to hold your house up on the street. You have to have the steps. You're missing the foundation. So everything, and you can apply that example to every single problem you've thrown at me or that we've talked about right here. Is the only, it's like, well, what about this? What about this? What about this? If your dog knows it in private, and your dog understands it, but is not doing it in a realistic environment, it's because there's not enough accountability, and you're not doing a good enough job at blending those two together. You're going from super boring to really not boring at all. And it's like your dog's not listening because it's too much of a change. You have to blend those together.
Yeah, and she doesn't want to because the stuff is much more exciting. Yeah, exactly.
And so again, it comes, okay, so if your dog's like, yeah, but squirrel, okay, holding the dog accountable. No, I told you to place. I told you to come. I told you to sit. Accountability. But then it's also making sure that like you're not jumping from boring inside the house. Womp, womp, womp. And then you go outside to squirrels running around. It's like, oh, whoa, look at, boo, boo. Like completely night and day. And then you're scratching your head like, she sits great inside. I don't understand. And I'm like, well, those are two different things. 100%. You have to blend those together.
Yeah, I have to work harder. Yep. I guess that's what
it is. Oh, yeah. Yeah, you, listen, again, it's the same thing. Like you're getting an animal to respond to the noises that are coming out of your mouth. That is not an easy thing to do. So yes, there's hard work. There's people who train their dogs for years.
I know.
So it's not easy. I mean, some dogs, like we talked about, make it easy. Some dogs are faster learners. Some dogs don't care about squirrels or chipmunks or other people. They're just happy to be outside. Those are the easy dogs. But then there's other dogs who aren't, and that's what you got, and you have to develop it.
And I have a herder, and I think she would be great with a herd of sheep. Oh my goodness.
She
herds the little doggies in the dog park because she shows her behavior, and guess what she does? So she doesn't even play as much anymore because she's older, and that's fine. Then she kind of herds the ones that she wants, and it's fine. But then when she's have enough time, and we have some benches to sit on, and I chat with people. So after about 20 minutes, when she's good and she sniffed everything, she sits right next to me and watches every dog in the dog park. She knows where every dog is at every place of time. She is so watchdog. It's incredible. And I don't have a herd of sheep for her. And it's hard. You know, we don't have, there's a training facility in the above in Indianapolis and a little further in Indiana. And if that would be closer, I would really train her on sheep. I just want her engagement and make her and so on.
Yeah, and there's other things that you can try to do. Like you can try to find barn hunting. You can try to find agility. You can try to find rally.
Agility with her. I do agility. Good. But she's not as engaged. She doesn't like it because it's boring for her. She'd rather
chase things, right?
Yeah, she's a chaser, and she doesn't, that's like, she's the slowest poke in agility, but that's okay. I mean, as long as she engages, I mean, I have to still manage the weave. We haven't accomplished that yet, but as soon as she has that down, then she has everything kind of down, and the teeter, that's harder. But other than that, then, she could do it. She's just very slow. She's not attracted to it. And she's not the dog like, I'll show you the ball. She would like to play the ball, but she's not waiting for that ball for 5 minutes to accomplish. Then she'll get the ball. She's not like that. She's smart. She knows it's like, oh, well, then I'm not doing it. She's really a good dog to teach. It's just it takes time. Two little things. Why did you call your dog Lakota? I'm just very curious. Mm-hmm. Did it come with the name, or why did you pick that name?
Yeah, good question. I picked it because I volunteered my time at a wolf sanctuary in Southern Colorado for on and off for like 5 summers. And she is six, going to be 7 this winter. And so I wanted to name her after a wolf at the sanctuary. And that's what I did, is I picked a wolf. And actually the wolf, I've never met the wolf. This wolf was actually had passed, but they have a list of all the wolves that have been on the sanctuary. And I really liked Lakota. And of course, Lakota comes from Native American
heritage
and community and culture, and so I thought that was really cool, and so that's why I named her Lakota.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm just telling you, because we work with the Lakota people, so cool. I work in language revitalization, and so when I saw that, it's like, what connection do you have to that? But now I understand it, yeah, because we work with the Lakota tribe and the Lakota people. Wow. And Lakota itself means people. So if the people, that's the word for, like, you know, how you know Sioux, I mean, how people said those are the Sioux people, that's a name that was given by wrong naming, blah blah, but if they talk about themselves, they call themselves Lakota, and that means people. So each of these tribes has their own name, but it means people. So that means person, people means Lakota of that tribe. So yeah, I was just curious because I have that connection. We work with 40-50 tribes in the US, in Canada, and other countries to revitalize their languages. So that's just, I was curious. So anyways, that's that one. And the last thing is, I have a stepmother or something, or mother-in-law, whatever you call her. So she has a dog. I pointed out a couple of days ago that I'm going to talk to you and have this appointment, blah, blah. And she looked you up and she was like, oh, wow, I researched him and he's good. And she's been having Ridgebacks for her lifetime. I think she had already 4 Ridgebacks. She got now one she can't handle and she doesn't know how to train because that one is such a timid one. She has the opposite character. And so I'm not sure if she's interested in even come to your academy because they're only 4 hours away. They're in Connecticut. And so I thought maybe if she might do that eventually, but I guess if she's doing a consultant lesson like this, I do with her, I think you can probably tell her a lot of stuff already, I guess. What would you recommend?
Yeah, I think that would be the best thing because, like I said, I mean, this consulting, we could talk about anything. I talk to breeders and dog trainers and whatever, and it's really to just kind of talk and pick each other's brains. And I think that would be the best thing, is to just have her sign up for the consulting and talk about all that stuff. I think that would be I think that would be the best thing to do.
Yeah that's what I thought. And I'll recommend her that because I feel like, I mean, I have not seen any other trainer like you I've watched trainers in UK and Germany, that's where I'm from, and they're all good, but you can make it happen in a short time, and you know, you train the people rather than the dogs, which some people do, the other trainers do that too. But I mean, what I have seen with very reactive dogs that you had was incredible. So yeah, that is something that the last question before we close, when you have a dog that nips, like, because that's what she does, she never bit, she nips, is that something you can train off to, that because of obedience she gets to know at one point that she has to leave it or not do it? Is that something that they get to know not to use as a tool for them when they have fear, when they want to hurt, blah blah blah? Is that something I can also work with, you feel?
Say what kind of context is this in? Like, what do you mean?
That if she would nip, like, before I get her to, if I do it as much as often when I see that things come up, that at one point she wouldn't engage in it anymore because it's the end of her game. Like, she would bark, charge, run, and maybe nip at someone. So if I control everything beforehand, then she shouldn't nip anymore.
Yeah. Okay. Now I know what you're saying. Yeah. It would be a little bit of both. It would be saying like, okay, her trigger is, you know, little kids running and squeaking. She's like, oh, that looks fun. I'm bored. Let's do that. And then it would be an immediate, like, and this is the interesting thing too, is it's more like, oh, I, you know, it's not like, holy crap, what are you doing? Like, they're kids. Like, you're like, oh, she's a herding breed. I get it. So it would be, Gigi come or here, she'd come to you. Uh-huh. And then you'd kind of just say, okay, there's kids playing over here. We're going to move away. It would be that in the beginning. And to be honest, I think over time you could probably desensitize her a little bit, especially if it's, it's tough because again, mm-hmm. it's like you're using these kids as bait. So, and not too yeah. many parents, including myself, I think it would be more of just being, being more proactive instead of reactive, yeah. not trying to scramble when it happens. It would be more like, hey, we're just not going to let this happen.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Yeah, I'll just have to put more work in. I hope you give me some other. I knew it's not going to happen. I just wanted to, yeah, go through it. But I think what you said is I'm missing pieces of this next step, you know, in between. And I think I'm done and try it out. It's not working. Yes, because I'm still not there yet. And I have to still put work in. And it can take months and years, or I really intensify my training and it's faster, but I work 11 hours a day, so that's harder than to get the training in more likely over the weekends or, you know. But I mean, she has as much exercise as she needs. We live out at the woods and she can run like a crazy lady there. She loves it. I mean, she's a you can leave her outside and she would survive because she hunts.
Yeah. Oh yeah,
she never got something. But actually, my cat and her are a team. My cat brings me every day mice and little critters, but mostly mice and, you know, whatever, chipmunks, and then, or rabbits, mostly, yeah, big enough rabbits. That dog, if she gets to one, I saw her, she started eating on them. I'm like, no, you're not gonna get that. And that's not a present from the cat, you know. So she would survive outside. She's that type of dog, but I don't want her to, you know, mm-hmm. engage in that. But what I'm saying is, yes, I just have to train her well and that she fits in and she can still have her fun because, she's in dog heaven where we live. I mean, I wish I could show you in FaceTime because it's a valley behind the woods. We have a natural park with a lake. She can swim. She can do anything. So I love what you do. You're amazing. And wish I could meet you one time in person.
No, thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I mean, you're so much help. You have no idea for people who struggle. I mean, I'm just crying because I always cry. But you're really good, and it helps so much that you open it to the public. And yeah, keep going because people learn so much, and they it helps the dogs. You know, it just helps them. So, thank you.
Well, thank you.
Our family has grown. Welcome to the world, Hannah baby. Introducing a new collection. Hannah Soft, made with Tencel. It's so breathable, with stretchy comfort for all of baby's first moments. And it's cool and gentle on their skin all year round. Entrusted Hannah quality for your most precious gift. Hannah Soft, made to last. Shop now at hannahanderson.com. Our family has grown. Welcome to the world, Hannah baby. Introducing a new collection. Hannah Soft, made with Tencel. It's so breathable, with stretchy comfort for all of baby's first moments. And it's cool and gentle on their skin all year round. Entrusted Hannah quality for your most precious gift. Hannah Soft, made to last. Shop now at hannahanderson.com.